Hey, you guys, time for another movie retrospective. So this one was actually in the Patreon poll, and it was tied with another one. So I flipped a coin to see which one we were going to do, and it ended up being this one, which I've been wanting to do for a really long time. This is Mask of the Red Death from 1964.
Pretty good movie.
Yeah, directed by Roger Corman and starring Vincent Price. I mean, Vincent Price.
It's a classic.
It definitely is.
It's a classic.
Easily my favorite of all of Roger Corman's Edgar Allan Poe adaptations. It's certainly the best looking one.
Yeah, good color palette.
And, you know, I didn't actually know this until I started because I've seen this movie a bunch of times, like starting when I was a kid, but I didn't actually know this until I started researching the movie. But the cinematographer on this was Nicholas Roeg, who would become quite famous later on as a director in his own right. He did Don't Look Now, one of my favorite movies from the 1970s. He did Performance, I believe. He did The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie. He's made like a shit ton of really good movies, so you can really see like his visual eye, and this is like really, really gorgeous.
Right. These movies always kind of reminded me of kind of like an American version of a Hammer horror film.
Oh, they definitely are.
Just not quite as boobalicious. Hammer was about showing boobs.
This had a little bit of boobage in it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, just not as focused on it.
Not as focused. Yeah. Not as boob-centric.
Oh, man.
Or boob-focused.
Yeah. It's very Russ Meyers about there in a British kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Hammer. I should say, too, that this particular movie, a large proportion of the cast were British because they shot it in the UK. Mm-hmm. I think this was only one of two because this was the seventh of Roger Corman's 8 Edgar Allan Poe adaptations. I think we did House of Usher like a while back. It's weird because I put this on the list initially because Shudder had added almost all of them, I think. But then when I went to watch it again last night, like before recording it was gone.
Yep,
so I had to rent it on Amazon Prime, but it was only $3.99. So I wasn't like sad or anything. But it was just weird how it was there and then it was not there. I think what happened was the rights reverted to someone else because I think a special edition Blu-ray of this just came out like a month and a half ago. So I imagine that they only let them show it into like the good shit because they want everybody to like buy the special edition. So basically, like I said, this is the 7th of the 8 adaptations. The 8th one, I believe, was Tomb of Ligeia. And those two last ones were shot in the UK. To take advantage of, you know, various tax breaks and shit like that. And, but to do that, you had to use, like, it was a certain percentage of the cast had to be British. Like, you could have an American star, you could have a couple people in there that were Americans, but they mostly had to be Brits. So that's why, you know, Hazel Court is in this, who was in, I think she was in a bunch of Hammer movies, too, actually. She's probably the most boobalicious one.
Good old Hammer. I tell you, man, they love them some boobs down there. I can understand it, though, man.
That's like right up your alley. You would probably fit right in.
Hell yeah. If you're going to make a movie, put a fucking boobs in it. A whole bunch of them. Guys will come see it. It's called getting asses in seats.
You know what? I feel like Tom should make a movie just called Boobs the Movie.
Boobs the Movie.
And it would just be like wall-to-wall boobs, like the whole time. There might be a plot in there somewhere, but it's, and maybe an explosion, but it's like, it's just mostly just a parade of
jiggling
boobs. Jiggling boobies.
Yeah. It's genetic, you know what I mean? I don't know what it is. It's just genetic.
It's just something about boobs.
Yeah.
Well, actually, like I said, in this one,
it's like an ass, but it's in the front.
Yeah, it's your front butt.
I guess so, yeah. it's something genetic, you know, in certain guys, I guess, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to greater or lesser extent,
I guess. So.
They are kind of fascinating, the way they hang there globularly.
Look at that. But... Now she's teasing me.
Well, you do actually get to see Hazel Court in this one. She don't get to see her boobs, really. Oh, you kind of can see them through this kind of diaphanous, like, thing that she has on.
It's okay. It's just been... Hammer consistently takes it to another level, though.
Yeah, and just like hanging up in front of you. Being
they
like,
weren't bashful about it.
Yeah.
They knew exactly why you were watching this movie.
This one was a little subtler.
Pretty
Although
much.
I will say that you do get to see Hazel Court branding an upside down crucifix onto her boob.
Yeah.
Onto her décolletage.
Yes.
If you want to call it that. So yeah, so basically this one shot in the UK, like I said, so this was the first one that done that. Like Roger Corman, very famously, these last two Poe pictures that he shot in the UK, he complained a little bit because he said, look, if I was shooting these in the US, it would take like 3 weeks. Because he had like his crew. He knew, everybody knew what they wanted to do. They kind of got in there and got shit done. He's like, in the UK, man, it's like they got to like fucking take tea breaks. And it's like, and it took 2 weeks longer than it would take in the US because he thought they were kind of slow, which I thought was kind of funny. However, I will say, like I said, you do have a lot of British people in this movie, which is great. Also, the sets that they used in this, which they redressed a little bit from, if you guys have ever seen the movie Beckett with, I think Peter O'Toole was in it. I remember watching it in high school. It's really, really good. It was based on the play. And they redressed some of the sets from that. Because the sets in this are gorgeous. I love the visuals of this movie. It's just like so sumptuous and colorful.
The floor and everything's all colored tiles.
Yeah, it's great.
Marble.
And honestly, I've seen some critics say that this, Roger Corman's Poe Pictures might have been an influence on Mario Bava, Dario Argento.
Probably.
Like, for that saturated, like, super colorful look. Because, you know, Mario Bava made the first Giallo movie, but the first one was black and white. So Blood and Black Lace, which was kind of the first color one, that didn't come out until a few years after this. So, could be. I don't know. Now, this movie, I thought they did something really kind of interesting with it. I always love when Vincent Price plays a villain because, man, he leans into that shit. It's like he has, I guess some people would say it was campy, but I don't know. I just really, really like the way he kind of hams it up when he plays a villain. You can tell he's having a fucking ball with it.
Kind of like he did in Dr. Phoebe's.
Yeah, like all those kind of movies. And because he played a villain, I guess, in a lot of these, the Poe movies. But he just really, really seems to relish playing a villain. And he's really having a lot of fun with it. And in this one, he is pretty fucking evil. So just like in the short story, and like I said, I'll go a little bit more into it, because this is actually kind of based on two Poe short stories, not just Mask of the Red Death. But Vincent Price plays, Prince Prospero, who, in the story, he's a shithead, and it's basically, the story by Edgar Allan Poe is very, very short. It's only, what, like 3 pages or something like that? It's really, really, it's really short. So to expand it out into a whole story, you kind of had to add, some other elements. It does have the element of Prince Prospero and all of his kind of decadent courtiers partying it up, like in this big castle, while, the plague ravages all the peasants outside, with the message being that you, even though you have all this money and you think you're protected from it, you're actually not, because it's a disease and it will get you in the end. I like, though, that one thing they added to this, which actually kind of, it's not in the story, but I like that it kind of made it more, it made it more realistic that the courtiers would actually think that they would be protected from the plague. Because in this version of the story, Prince Prospero, played by Vincent Price, is a Satanist. And basically his whole deal, the reason why he's doing all this decadent shit and cruel shit in his castle, other than just being an asshole, is that he thinks that he's serving Satan. And by, and going on from that, him being like in Satan's good books, he thinks, well, that just protects him and that protects everyone else from the disease. So I think that was like a good thing that they added to the story, because it does make it more, story-wise, it makes it more realistic that people will be like, oh, you're protected by the devil and we can't get the disease if we come here and we're under your protection, and by extension, we're under Satan's protection. So that kind of like makes more sense why people would come there. So basically, like I said, they establish right out the gate that Prospero is just like this giant fucking dickhead, because he comes through in his fancy little carriage in this little village and almost runs over a baby, like someone, because he's just like, fuck that baby, whatever, peasant baby. And somebody has to like run and like, snatch it out of the way. And then he's like, what the fuck's going on here? These peasants, blah, blah, blah. And then there's this really young girl whose name is Francesca. And basically, he kind of takes a shine to her because she's very pious and she's very innocent. And his whole thing is he really likes to corrupt the innocent because he thinks that Satan likes that. So that's just something that he likes to do.
Probably does.
Well, yeah, you would think.
You would think.
You would think that would be Satan's bag right there.
Like, go ahead and corrupt some shit.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so that's what he's planning on doing. So basically, he snatches his girl because she's all pretty and redheaded and stuff. And then the first thing for his entertainment, he's like, okay, well, we captured your boyfriend, Gino, and your dad, whose I think name is Ludovico, like Ludovico technique from Clockwork Orange, just saying. But so he tells her, well, you have to choose, like, which one I kill. And she's like, yeah, fuck that, bro. She's like, I don't want to do that. And so there's this big altercation. And then Prince Prospero finds out that the Red Death, i.e. the plague, has come to the village. There's this old woman and she dies of it. And then he's like, okay, well, we need to get the fuck out of here. But I'm taking this chick with me. And I'm also taking her boyfriend and her dad as leverage so I can get her to do what I want. Because I'll, you know, hold that over her head that they, you know, that they're there. So he basically keeps her captive at the castle, kind of holding the fate of her boyfriend and her dad over her head while he's sort of talking about his satanic beliefs and like trying to corrupt her, get her to kind of go along with his things. And she's very naive. The one thing about this I will say, though, that it's like, I'm not really sure, because the thing that happens at the end where she seems like she's going along with it, I don't know if she's really going along with it because she's like, oh, intriguing, and she's just really naive and she's just like, what's this Satan biz, this seems pretty cool, or if she's just doing it so make it so she can escape. I mean, because she does try to escape later on, and I think she does actually escape. But there's like some weird, like, unclear things where it seems like, where it almost seems like she's kind of into it. I don't know. It's really weird. But yeah, so Hazel Court is already at the castle, and she is Prince Prospero's wife, mistress, consort, whatever. She's also a Satanist. Like I said, she does the whole boob thing with the upside down cross, like with the brand or whatever. And she's not too happy about this younger, perkier, redheaded chick turning up in the castle.
They tend to do that for some reason. They get jealous. I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it. I don't understand. I can't understand it.
Well, I mean, she's a, I'm getting thrown over for somebody like younger and cuter.
I guess that's the fear that older women go through.
Well, yeah,
they don't want to be replaced.
Well, yeah, you don't want to, you know, you're going to be like left, like living with a whole bunch of cats. Although, actually, that sounds kind of nice. I wouldn't mind just living with a bunch of cats.
he wasn't going to throw her out, though. He was just adding to his collection.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And like,
sister wives, that's what they call them. Sister wives. That's what they call them in certain religions.
Some satanic Mormon shit.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Well, I guess what it was, because you have to think that Hazel Court's character, whose name is Juliana, she is also a Satanist, and she's all about it, man. She just, like, goes in there and does all the rituals. It's like, I want to be betrothed to Satan and everything. So she's on board with the Satanism. So I guess maybe Prospero is just kind of like, well, I corrupted that one. Like, that worked way better than I was planning. So it's like, it's not fun anymore, because it's like, oh, well, now she's evil, too. So now I need a good one. Like, because it's more fun to, like, fuck up a good one than just have, like, an evil one. So I'm guessing that's what it's worth going for. But, yeah, so that happens. So there's this whole thing where he's kind of going through the shit and, like, talking about Satan and everything. Now, one thing I will say, too, that not only, I mentioned this earlier, but this is not only an adaptation of Mask of the Red Death. They actually did something quite clever, because the short story is very short, and you'd really have to expand it out, like, to make a feature-length film out of it. So what they decided to do, instead of just adding a bunch of random shit, was they actually added a subplot that is almost entirely the Edgar Allan Poe story Hop Frog, which I thought was a very interesting thing to do. Hmm. Because Hop Frog is about a person with dwarfism, and he works at the court of this really asshole king or prince or something like that. So it's kind of in the same setting already. He has a little girlfriend who is also a little dwarf named Esmeralda, who is a beautiful little dancer. She actually pisses off one of the courtiers, and he smacks her, which makes Hop Frog, although in the movie they call him Hop Toad, I'm not really sure why, but his name is Hop Frog. And it makes him really, really mad, so he decides he's going to get, like, this really, really hardcore revenge, in the sense that, now in the movie version, I think it's only one guy that he kind of tricks him. He's like, hey, when we do the masquerade ball tonight, wear this gorilla suit and act like a gorilla. It'll be fucking hilarious and like everyone will be super into it. And then, by the way, I'm not telling you this part, but I'm going to like tie you up to the chandelier and then I'm going to set you on fire and burn you alive because you're a douche. So that does happen. So it's only like one guy in the movie, but I think in the story it was several guys and he like chained them all together and like set them on fire and then him and Esmeralda got the fuck out of there. So I kind of like that they added that because like I said, the setting of it was similar. And so it kind of made like a nice addition. Also, the dude that plays the dude that gets burned alive in the gorilla suit is, his name is Alfredo, like Fettuccine Alfredo. That's how I remembered it. And he is played by, what's that dude's name? Patrick McGee or something like that. He was the same guy that played the writer in A Clockwork Orange. Yeah, the guy that got his, like, the wife got raped and murdered. And then he's been in tons of other shit. But every time I see him, I'm always like, Clockwork Orange guy! You know what I mean? I think he's like a Shakespearean actor. Like, he started out as a stage actor. So I thought that was pretty cool the way they incorporated those two stories, you know, with a similar setting into one thing. Now, the first time I saw this movie when I was a kid, I remember because Mask of the Red Death, along with The Telltale Heart, are my very favorite Edgar Allan Poe stories. I remember the first time that I saw this movie being really disappointed that they didn't go, that they didn't do the seven chambers in the story. You know what I'm saying? I mean, now I can appreciate budget constraints, blah, blah, blah. So really, they only did four of them. They do like the yellow. There's a yellow room, a purple room, a white room, and then the black room, like with the red window. In the story, there's three more. There's like an orange one, a green one, and a blue one, I think. So I was always kind of sad that they didn't put that in there. But, that, you know, I can see why they didn't now. Like I said, budgetary constraints. And then they had the set done, they had them all like in a row, so they had these really, really great shots where, you know, the camera would like track like through the rooms like while they walked through them, and I thought that was really cool. And if you were gonna do that for like six or seven rooms, that would probably just get really tiresome, so I guess that's why they didn't do it, other than it being too expensive to make seven fucking rooms for like three fucking scenes or however much was in there. So yeah, so basically what ends up happening, I think there's kind of, you know, Vincent Price kind of cackles around and he's like being really evil. And he ends up, I think he ends up killing or wounding. No, I guess he does get killed. The dad of Francesca, because they do this whole thing where it's kind of like Russian roulette, but with poison daggers instead of a gun. And the dad ends up dying. So she tries to like endear herself to Vincent Price by pretending to be all into this Satan shit. And then trying to help her boyfriend, Gino, escape. Now, she thinks, like, Juliana comes to her and is like, hey, I'll help you let your boyfriend out because, you know, I don't like that you're here because, you know, Vincent Price is looking at you and not me, so get the fuck out of here. But turns out that Juliana is evil, too, and she kind of fucks her over and tells the guards and everything like that. However, just as in the story, Mask of the Red Death, the Red Death shows up at the party. Now, I really like the way they shot this. Like, the dude that comes in there, and he's got all the red shit on, and it's just like in the story where, although I don't like that they didn't incorporate the clock as much. Like, there is a clock in it, but there's no clock in the black room like there was in the story, which is another thing that kind of bummed me out a little bit, but whatever. It's just
been so long since I've read that story. I do remember that clock. Wasn't there a bunch of colored glass, too?
Yeah, well, every single room was, like, decorated. Yeah. Like I said, it was a suite, and there was seven rooms. You could see the ones, like, through there. Like, the way the story is, like, really, really great. Like, visually, I mean, you could easily make a...
That was Poe messing with those drugs again.
Well, yeah.
It's all psychedelic.
Definitely, you know what? In this movie, there is one scene, which... And I feel like a lot of movies that came out in the 60s, especially Roger Corman ones, the Edgar Allan Poe ones... always had a, and then the acid kicked in moment.
Yeah, exactly.
This one has that when Juliana is doing her satanic ritual, you know, to kind of say, hey, Satan, like, I'm going to be your bride now or whatever. And there's this really weird sequence where everything goes like that, and then it, like, turns blue. And then she's, like, laying on a slab, like, with this dress that you can kind of see through. And she's laying there. And then all of these people come in there and they like do kind of dance. I guess they're all supposed to be like warriors or demons or something like that, but it's really kind of weird because one of them is like an African tribal warrior, and then one of them is like a, I don't know if he's supposed to be like a samurai, but it's clearly like a white guy with like weird makeup on and stuff. So it's just like, it's very bizarre.
They just use what they had,
I guess. And then so they're all just kind of all dancing around and doing their thing, and then they all like pretend to stab her and she's like laying there screaming and stuff. Yeah. So I guess that's supposed to represent all of Satan's demons, or, you know, three or four of them. I don't remember how many it was, but kind of taking her soul finally, or taking her last bits of it. I don't know. But it was just kind of like, I feel like there was a lot of these sort of like acid trippy kind of scenes.
What was in the those. 60s?
That's what I mean. Yeah. Even some giallo movies had that, like a little bit later on, where they would kind of have like All the Colors of the Dark had kind of scenes like that where they were real like fucking surreal and shit. So I feel like there was a lot of that going on. This movie in particular, I think, is real. Like I said, all of Poe, all of you know, Corman's Poe movies are good, but I think this one is the best, just because it's so beautiful to look at. I mean, like all the sets are gorgeous, the costumes are gorgeous, just like the way it's shot is beautiful. But some people have said too that you can actually see, because as I said, Nicholas Roeg was the cinematographer on this. And he said it's, and everyone said it's like really funny that there's this whole sequence in this movie where the Red Death like comes to the masquerade party and is like walking through the thing, and Vincent Price is like running after him like through the rooms, and they're like, oh, just like in Don't Look Now, like Donald Sutherland chasing after the little figure in the red raincoat, you know what I mean? It was just, it's very much kind of a prototype of that, which I think is really cool. But yeah, so the Red Death comes in there, and it's funny because Vincent Price, initially, I keep calling him Vincent Price. His character's name is Prospero, but it's Vincent Price, come on. So Vincent Price thinks that the Red Death is there and that he's the devil. So he's kind of like, hey, devil man, what's up? Like, I've been doing all this shit for you. And it's like, look at all the debauchery that's going on. It's like all these courtiers are in here pretending they're animals and all this other kind of like orgies and shit, whatever the fuck is going on. Can't show orgies in the 60s, but that was what was implied. So he was just kind of like, hey, man, I'm your biggest fan or whatever. And then the Red Death is like, bruh, I'm not the devil. It's like, yeah. I'm death. I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. And it's like, we don't care. We're just going to kill everybody, including you. So I really, really liked that they had, like, the dude that did the voiceover for the Red Death was really cool. And he had that weird mask on with all the fringe and shit. And then he's like, take your mask off, take it. And then it was Vincent Price's face, because he's like, you know, you'll see the face of death, like, when your time has come. And then he's like, no, don't kill me. You kill everyone else, but it's like, I'm wonderful. And of course, I can't be killed because Satan told me that I couldn't be killed or something like that. I'm like, I don't know. It'd be like, Satan makes all kind of promises. I don't know why anybody ever like listens to him. But yeah, so he ends up getting killed. Francesca ends up getting away. All of the irritating courtiers. Well, hi there, Pookie.
Pookie has showed up.
Pookie has showed up. And she did you watch Mask of the Red Death, Pookie?
She's watched some of it.
Yeah, she did watch some of it. Was it scary? It's not. It's actually not scary. And I think that, I think Roger Corman said, and maybe Vincent Price said too, that this was their favorite of the 8 Poe pictures that they had done. Although it didn't do as well as some of the other ones. And Samuel Arkoff from American International Pictures, who was the very famously the distributor for these, thought that maybe it's, well, it wasn't scary or gory enough, and it was too arty-farty, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
And so audiences didn't like it as much. But honestly, of all of them, I'd have to watch all of them, because, you know, I've seen some of the ones recently, like House of Usher and stuff, but some of them, it's been a long time since I've seen them. I remember Premature Burial being really good, Pit and the Pendulum being really good, but I feel like this one is my favorite just because it looks so fantastic. And it doesn't even matter that it's not scary or that it's not, you know what I mean? It's just such a visual feast for the eyes that it doesn't even have to be scary. And like I said, fucking Vincent Price being a villain is always fucking great. And I'm just never going to get tired of that. So it's like, it doesn't even have to be scary because he's just having such a great time in the role and everything's just so gorgeous that I'm really not even bothered that it's not bloody or anything like that at all. But and
it's just
like
entertaining for the kind of movie that
it's just like a really entertaining, cool looking movie. And like I said, I really like that they incorporated that they didn't just add a bunch of bullshit to the story to kind of pad it out, but they actually added another Poe story in with it that sort of like fit in with the same theme. So that shows me that they were kind of like thinking. Although I must say that I feel like Roger Corman, as notoriously quick as he liked to work and, you know, and cheap as he liked to work, he actually went through, I believe, at least 5 different screenwriters on this, just because he had been wanting to do Mask of the Red Death from like 1960, and he just couldn't get a script that he liked. He kept getting a dude's like, hey, write a script based on Mask of the Red Death, and then he was like, nah, I don't like it, and then he would have somebody do it. So it took him like 4 years to get a version that he liked. And I don't even think he liked that satanic angle at first, but I honestly think that that's a good thing that to add to the story, because like I said, it makes it more believable why all these people would be rushing there for protection. I mean, because you wouldn't just be protected by Prince Prosper's wealth and, you know, this big, you know, imposing castle that he had, but you'd also be protected, or so you think, by infernal forces or like Satan's power. So you can see why, you know, shit would get around about that. It's like you'll be safe in there because it's under Satan's protection. So, you know, so I like that they added that aspect to it. I thought it was very clever. But yeah, definitely, this is probably not only my favorite of the Roger Corman Poe pictures, maybe my favorite Poe adaptation ever, just the way it looks. Like I said, Mask of the Red Death, along with Telltale Heart, are my favorite Poe stories. I even did a whole board game based on Mask of the Red Death with the rooms that you have to get out of there, like, before the Red Death gets you and shit like that. So it's, you know, it's a story that made a lot of impact on me when I was growing up, and just like the whole visual of it is really appealing to me. So obviously anytime you do anything like that and you do it all beautiful and technicolor like this one, like I said, it doesn't even have to be scary. You just get some good actors in there, get some good set design, and I'm pretty happy with it. Look at little Pokey.
Yep.
Look at her little sweet face. Yep, it's all her eyes
smile,
are closed.
Smile eyes.
Her little eyes are closed. I'm so glad you came in to be on the show, Pokey.
Mm-hmm.
You very rarely sit still long enough to be on the show because she's always
starring Pooks.
Moving around. Yeah.
Guest starring Pooks.
Guest starring the Pokey. I'm going to put that in the title when I put this up too. But yeah, so I know Tom hasn't said like a great deal.
There's not much to say about it from, you know, actually. You like it. It was entertaining. It's not very scary.
No, it's not.
It's nowhere near, to me, it's nowhere near as good as, say, like, that Hammer Horror Carmilla flick.
Well, yeah. That's,
with the lesbian vampires.
Well, yeah,
the
I
boobs,
mean,
you know, of course.
Obviously, lesbian vampires are going to, like, win
yeah,
over pretty much
you know
everything.
I mean? But it is a movie.
At least it's a movie.
At least it's a movie.
Yeah, but I really, really like it. So, like I said, if you're into 60s shit, if you're into Edgar Allan Poe, if you love Vincent Price and you haven't seen this somehow, then probably you should see it. Although you can't see it on Shudder anymore because they just took it right off and I didn't even notice they took it away. But you can rent it on Amazon Prime for $3.99, at least as of this recording. So, yeah, go and check it out. And we will see you on the next one. Bye.